Can you believe Bob's Discount Furniture opened 35 years ago? Back in 1991, landlines ruled the day. You could not binge watch your favorite shows, and podcasts were science fiction. A lot has changed since then, but Bob's is still doing things the Bob's way, bringing you top-tier style and features at 90s-era prices. Need to kick back? The Sedona Power Reclining Sofa is the ultimate relaxation station. Packed with genuine leather, power recline, built-in charging, cup holders, and Bob-a-pedic seating for just $12.99. You can even pair it with a matching love seat and recliner. And if you love hosting, the Homeworks dining set is built for summer parties with tons of hidden storage in the table and bench, plus comfy Bob-a-pedic foam for only $6.99. And don't miss the best-selling Cascade bedroom set. It features a trendy, reeded design, USB ports, felt line drawers, and three gorgeous finishes at only $2.50 per piece. Stop in this Labor Day weekend to celebrate 35 years of Bob's Discount Furniture.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for Sunday, October 26th, 2025. I'm your host, Blois Olson. And as I think about this fall weekend and the Vikings played on Thursday, the Gophers played yesterday, the Wild played last night, Timberwolves have their home opener today, the Prince musical is opening, we're in fall football for high school, and we have a mayor's race in a couple weeks. And what it continues to dawn on me, and I have to remind myself, and frankly have to remind a lot of other people, is that we are in an era where I believe the news of the day, the headlines of the day, the angst of the headlines of the day are really impacting some people, and they're really not impacting the mass majority of people. And I thought about this on Friday when it came out Thursday that Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem was going to be in Minneapolis. And I watched and talked to many who wondered what she was going to say. What was the message at 4:30 on a Friday for her to hold a news conference? Was this about troops, federal troops coming? Was this about ICE raids? What was it about? And it created, even within our content business and the consulting side, a certain anticipation, angst, scenario planning, things like that here in Minnesota. And several folks reached out and asked what was going to happen. And the best answer was, we don't know, but it's Friday at 4:30. So who knows what will happen? Meanwhile, folks protested the idea that she would even have a news conference. The Mayor Fry put out a very effective video that said, we're going to push back, that Minneapolis is not welcome to ICE raids. And it just struck me, the more I processed and the more I analyzed it, that we're in an era of a certain amount of charade politics. And I know people get frustrated. Some people get frustrated with both sidism, but it struck me that people were protesting Kristi Noem coming to town, even though they didn't know what she was going to say. And one of those most vocal groups is MIRAC, MIRAC is the Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee. I get news releases and news advisories from them regularly. And it struck me that I'd never talked to them, that they hold news conferences, that they are loud, but they never seem to necessarily, quote, break through. They don't get asked questions about what their agenda really is, but they're loud. And sometimes, actually most of the time these days, being loud is, I think, viewed as being effective. And the reality is, I don't think that's always the case. I don't think that being loud is necessarily being effective. There's a certain amplification and loudness of Secretary Noem coming to town. And so I decided to invite Mirek on the Sunday Take. And Montana Hirsch will be my guest. And ask, what are they for? What are they against? And is there any sort of civil govern operation that they want to promote? Because that's my question. Are we just loud against things, or do we acknowledge this idea that governing and systems are required for a civil, organized society? So when we come back, Montana Hirsch from MIRAC is going to join me. I'm going to ask those questions about immigration and about, is there a construct that is different, or is this just about protest? I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Can you believe Bob's Discount Furniture opened 35 years ago? Back in 1991, landlines ruled the day. You could not binge watch your favorite shows, and podcasts were science fiction. A lot has changed since then, but Bob's is still doing things the Bob's way, bringing you top-tier style and features at 90s-era prices. Need to kick back? The Sedona Power Reclining Sofa is the ultimate relaxation station. Packed with genuine leather, power recline, built-in charging, cup holders, and Bob-a-pedic seating for just $12.99. You can even pair it with a matching love seat and recliner. And if you love hosting, the Homeworks dining set is built for summer parties with tons of hidden storage in the table and bench, plus comfy Bob-a-pedic foam for only $6.99. And don't miss the best-selling Cascade bedroom set. It features a trendy, reeded design, USB ports, felt-lined drawers, and three gorgeous finishes at only $2.50 per piece. Stop in this Labor Day weekend to celebrate 35 years of Bob's Discount Furniture.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole-body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
We are back on Sunday Take, and my guest is Montana Hirsch. She's a member of MIRAC, the Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee. They have been very vocal in the past week, including Friday's visit of Kristi Noem. They have a rally coming up on Tuesday. And I want to, as I said in the open, use this week's show to kind of bring in some other voices on the issue of immigration. We've seen a lot of it in other parts of the country with ICE and federal troops. There has been presence in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. But we oftentimes just get the what's in the headlines or what's in the discussion or what's on social media. We don't oftentimes have a conversation about it. So, Montana, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Let's just start. Secretary Noem was in Minneapolis Friday. There was, you know, even from my perspective, what's she going to say? What's her agenda while she's here? It was a news conference, kind of a here's what we're doing, here's what we're going to do. But there wasn't really news out of it or any discernible new action in Minneapolis. What was your takeaway and Mirak's takeaway from the Noem news conference?
Yeah, so our takeaway was just that we condemn her visit. We condemn the racist and hateful lies she spreads about immigrants. Conference earlier in the day saying that she is not welcome here in Minnesota. We know that Minneapolis and St. Paul stand with our immigrant neighbors. And what we've been doing is that we've been preparing for what's to come. And yes, she didn't introduce any real new information at all. But, you know, we have people trained across the metro area. We've been doing raid response trainings. We know a lot of people want to learn what to do if there are increase in federal activity, if there are immigration raids. People want to stand up and fight back and defend immigrant rights. And we have plans to work alongside many other organizations to call large mass mobilizations in response to any increase in federal activity or large scale immigration raid. But yeah, we're not going to back down from our fight for immigrant rights. We're not going to back down for our campaign demands, and we're not going to let Kristi Noem's visit scare us.
Is there a one of the things that I think the Trump administration has been effective at is pointing out criminals or people who have been charged and convicted of crimes that are not here legally and then are deported? Is there any line that the criminal justice system, that previous criminals, people convicted of crimes are, you know, should be dealt with the criminal justice system? Or does Mirak just think that even that is too far for the federal government?
We believe that no human being is illegal. We are against all deportations.
Okay, so if someone is convicted of a crime, they should not be deported in your minds?
We do not believe in any deportations. We believe that no human being is illegal, and that is not related to immigration.
As you think about that position, and then you have people convicted of a violent crime, maybe it is criminal activity related to drugs or violence, how would Mirak suggest that either state or federal officials deal with those individuals?
I mean, that really doesn't have anything to do with what we're fighting for and what we're working on. We're an immigrant rights organization. We fight for immigrant rights. We depose all deportations, and we are going to be fighting in the streets until we get legalization for all.
Okay. When you think about legalization for all, is there a vision? Is there a system that you believe that the federal government could undertake that would allow immigration in an orderly fashion? Is citizenship part of that path? Is there, other than opposing what is currently happening with immigrants, what are you in support of from a system, from a governing system of immigration?
I mean, yeah, we believe in legalization for all means that, like, everybody, no matter what your immigration status is, has the right to live like a dignified life. And doesn't, you know, can live here. And, you know, we believe that the reason that there's so much forced migration is also due to, you know, the U.S. imperialism that we see. And yeah, we don't have a plan for that. We believe in, you know, we're working on local issues right now here with Mirak. We are part of a broader national network called Legalization for All that's fighting for that all across the country. But right now, what we're seeing is a huge attacks from the Trump administration and from, you know, increase in federal activity and ICE activity. And that's what we're responding to right now.
I see you have a rally coming up on Tuesday. One of the kind of taglines of that is no crowd control. I know this is an issue from a raid in June with local police, Minneapolis police. When you say no crowd control, but there may be civil unrest, is there a line in your mind that local law enforcement have to, you know, make sure that innocent bystanders' property is protected from either protests or uprisings?
So our no collusion demand, we believe that, or no, sorry, no crowd control demand. Yeah, we believe that police should not be controlling responses to federal activity, especially immigration raids. When people showed up on June 3rd in Minneapolis, people were concerned about their neighbors, about their communities. And instead of protecting the community from ICE and from federal agents, the police were, you know, protecting them from the community. And we believe that police are here. They should be serving, you know, the community that they're supposed to be serving, not federal agents, not property. They should be serving the community and protecting them.
I think post George Floyd and some of the less peaceful protests and riots from George Floyd, that there's feelings in the community, in the larger, broader metro area, amongst Minneapolis residents, that they're concerned that if there isn't crowd control in a protest, that either instigators or folks who have, you know, negative intentions, they want to start fires, they want to loot, won't be controlled. How do you balance the idea that local police can't manage a crowd with people's concerns for that and protecting their own property?
Well, what we're talking about is responses to federal immigration and federal raids. So in that situation, there is no reason that police should be responding and controlling their, you know, people who live in their areas of serving against federal agents who are there to terrorize their communities. I think that is the bottom line.
Okay, so if that interruption, let's just say protesters interrupt that raid and it becomes violent and property and other people are at risk, at what point does civility or a civil reaction, when is that warranted?
There's no reason for anything to become quote unquote violent if the police are actually protecting their communities and doing their jobs and not letting agents come in and terrorize their communities.
So you actually think police should prevent federal agents from operating in the city?
The separation ordinance and what we're pushing for is that they should protect communities against federal immigration raids.
What does that look like?
Not using police tape to block off an area to do an immigration raid, not harassing protesters who are coming and just kind of standing up and want ICE out of their city.
Okay, so you wouldn't actually ask police to prevent ICE from entering a building?
The mayor of Chicago has called for this. We do think that we would like the city of Minneapolis to prevent federal immigration from using city buildings and city properties. That is something that we can call for, and we support that.
Okay. As you look forward to kind of this issue playing out, obviously, there's an election next year. There's a mayor's election in a couple weeks, but there's also a few more years of the Trump administration. Is there any, where do you see the opportunity? Is this just a battle for the next 3 years, or do you believe that there's actually a way in which to change the dynamic with the federal government currently?
So just a couple weeks ago on the 16th, we held a press conference. We invited all the mayoral candidates to come and stand with our demands. We are kind of looking forward to that election to see, you know, who locally is going to be willing to work with us on our campaign, our ICE Out of Minneapolis Real Sanctuary Now campaign, where we hope to strengthen the Minneapolis separation ordinance with our four demands: no collusion, no crowd control, no cover-ups, and real consequences. So, yeah, I mean, right now we're really focused on that local demand. We think that strengthening the separation ordinance would have huge impacts for Minneapolis. At that press conference, we did have three candidates show up. We had Dwayne Davis, Omar Fateh, and Jazz Hampton, they all enthusiastically supported all of our demands. They signed on to our campaign. They stood with us and they spoke in favor of our campaign. We know that the current mayor, Jacob Frey, did not come. He has not signed on to our demands. And we're really looking forward to having a mayor and a city council who will work with us to make this sanctuary ordinance a sanctuary.
I think one of the things that I've observed is just that of all the voices here, all the research shows that people don't support the National Guard or ICE doing these raids, especially if people are, you know, just going about their life peacefully, but that there is a sense of concern about, you know, convicted violent criminals not being detained by local authorities. And when you think about it, do you guys, I mean, I want to, for this listenership, I want to make sure that they have an opportunity to understand where in the spectrum you are. And if it's immigration for all and no collusion, there is this, I think, concern that that's, you know, that's they don't know what it looks like if that's the law or if that's the way it works. That there are concerns about mass immigration. There's concerns about that on public resources. We already have housing challenges. There's pressure points within our society. How is that just part of the way in which you envision this happening in our cities? Or is there some sort of organized way in which you would institute the policies that you guys are advocating for?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the specific question?
Yeah, no, I mean, the question is there an organized way to implement these policies that you've seen in other parts of the country that would give the whole population confidence that this wouldn't add to further burdens on housing, on further burdens on public resources, if we did have immigration for all?
Yeah, we should fund those resources. We should fund housing. We should fund schools. We should stop sending, you know, paying ICE more and hiring more ICE agents and spending so much money federally on ICE and actually invest in resources, because the money is there. The resources are there. That doesn't have anything to do with it. And all immigrants should be able to live safe, dignified lives here, just like it.
Can you believe Bob's Discount Furniture opened 35 years ago? Back in 1991, landlines ruled the day. You could not binge watch your favorite shows, and podcasts were science fiction. A lot has changed since then, but Bob's is still doing things the Bob's way, bringing you top-tier style and features at 90s-era prices. Need to kick back? The Sedona Power Reclining Sofa is the ultimate relaxation station. Packed with genuine leather, power recline, built-in charging, cup holders, and Bob-a-pedic seating for just $12.99. You can even pair it with a matching love seat and recliner. And if you love hosting, the Homeworks dining set is built for summer parties with tons of hidden storage in the table and bench, plus comfy Bob-a-pedic foam for only $6.99. And don't miss the best-selling Cascade bedroom set. It features a trendy, reeded design, USB ports, felt line drawers, and three gorgeous finishes at only $250 per piece. Stop in this Labor Day weekend to celebrate 35 years of Bob's Discount Furniture.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's PRENUVO.com.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody else.
Okay. Montana Hirsch, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Thanks.
We're back on Sunday Take. You heard from Montana. You heard from Mirak on the fact that they don't have a view of what they're for as much as what they're against. And I think that's part of the culture of our politics right now. And as we get ready for the city elections and we get ready for next year's legislative races, I bring us back to an interview a few weeks ago with Senator Ann Rest, who's announced her retirement. She said, you can have all the politics you want in the campaign, but when you enter the Capitol, you go from candidate or activist to policymaker. And policy, separate from politics, requires knowledge, expertise, competence. And so I want to run through some of the numbers that impact our legislative races, our policy, as we get ready for 2026. Our consulting side, Fluence Advisory, put out a memo this week. My partner, Paul Anderson, did the majority of the research. But when you look at the last several years of legislative retirements and legislative turnover, you have lost a ton of institutional knowledge, which also means that there's a significant amount of newer legislators. And so you look at the departures from the legislature. And since 2020, Minnesota has lost some of their longest serving legislators. 28 members left with a combined total experience of 747 years of service. Put that in perspective. So 28 members left the legislature with 747 members. The longest serving, Lyndon Carlson, then Marion Murphy, then Dick Cohen, many of these Democrats, but Bruce Anderson, who passed away earlier this year, he had 31 years in the legislature. Bob Genther, Bud Dornis, Sonder Erickson, each had over 20 years in the legislature. Dean Erdahl, 22. Julie Rosen, Dave Senjum, Pat Garofalo, Rod Hamilton, all near 20 or at 20. Democrats, from Tom Bach to Chuck Wieger, Alice Houseman, Gene Wiginius, Gene Pawlowski, Paul Marquardt, Melissa Hortman, John Lesh, had 18 or more. So in that 28 members, every one of those members had served 18 years or more in the legislature. And with those members, 28 seats flipped, Senate and House. So that's over 10% of the legislature. Those are people with experience. That doesn't take into account the number of members who served a couple terms and then decided to retire. But there are two major retirements that illustrate the loss of the next legislature, Senator Ann Rest and Senator Jeremy Mulla. Rest has served as tax committee chair in both the House and the Senate. Miller was one of the youngest ever elected at 26 to join the Senate. He has been seen as pragmatic. He served as majority leader, president of the Senate. He was the founder of a purple caucus. And then you look at that next legislature, and you start to see that legislators who have served 15 years or more are going to shrink. And we're not even through all of our retirements. So how does that institutional knowledge, how does that experience play into what it means for the current legislature and the next legislature? So to put it in perspective, we have 27 legislators in their first term, 82 legislators who are in their second term or less, and 109, more than half the legislature, has been there for 6 years or less. That means that education policy, healthcare policy, transportation policy, all has new people shepherding it through the state. And I want to be clear, not all change is bad. New is not bad. But when we are about to face some fiscal speed bumps in the state, when education policy is so contentious, when healthcare is so volatile, we begin to have a challenge that we don't know what we don't know about the past. Imagine when you're at work or at home and somebody says, why did we do it that way? And somebody says, well, we just always have. But there's nobody at the legislature to explain why. And that could mean major policy upheaval in future legislators. And one of the reasons is because that quote from Ayn Rand, that a policymaker is different than a politician, means that the younger, the less experience you have, the other characteristics from both Republicans and Democrats is there's more activist-minded people. There's more polarizing issues. You think of my interview just a little bit ago with Montana Hirsch. What is their agenda? Where do they think we're going to get some of the policy done? Because ultimately, once you get elected, you have to govern. That will be the topic of the Sunday take. So what can we expect? As we look ahead to next year, precinct caucuses are on February 3rd. We have started to see several retirements. We believe we will see many more retirements on both the Democrat and Republican side. Some of those retirements may be experienced veteran legislators. Some of them may be one term, two terms, three terms. I know for a fact that Democrats are going to have some suburban retirements. I also believe that Republicans are going to have some rural retirements. So in those rural Republican districts, what you're going to see is you're going to see more activist-minded people. Because winning a primary in legislative seats is hard. It's expensive. But local parties that endorse through endorsing conventions have a lot of power. And the caucus system favors those folks who are activists or have a more conservative view or a more MAGA view for Republicans and a more progressive or a more DSA view for Democrats. That means that there's more likely to be more activists in future legislators. And so that's a challenge, because that institutional knowledge is vital in the legislative branch. It means consistent operation, guided decision-making from past experiences, prevent avoidable mistakes. Which brings me back to an interview earlier this year with Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, who was in the legislature herself. And when I asked what she learned as Lieutenant Governor that she would tell her legislative self, she said that implementing the laws the legislature passes are more challenging than I imagined as the administration. And so you think of the way cannabis has been rolled out. You think about paid family medical leave, which is coming. The legislature celebrated these ideas, but it actually took more work or was harder to implement than even the legislature imagined. And that's the hard work of governing. That's the hard work where policymaking turns to governing. I think about the paid family medical leave, and I think that, oh, Minnesota recruited somebody who did this in Massachusetts. That's good. That should help us avoid avoidable mistakes. However, Minnesota doesn't have a track record, and so business is worried about it. You take into account the federal upheavals, the economic upheavals, and we are likely to see more and more companies leaving Minnesota or laying people off before the end of the year and shutting down facilities here so that they don't have to comply with Minnesota law. That's easier when the economy's tough, and by all signs, our economy is tough. Our economy being challenged also means that in 2027, we are likely to have a more challenging budget. The results of the legislative session and the election will determine how tough that is. So ultimately, as we look ahead, and you look at candidates, you look at public office holders, how do you dig in? What is it that makes someone want to serve that has institutional knowledge? For instance, an accountant on the tax committee, a lawyer on the judicial committee, a teacher on the education committee, a nurse or a physician on the healthcare committee. They may bring their professional expertise, but do they bring the knowledge of governing and policy? We haven't even gotten to the influence of special interests or unions in these legislative pushes. And so as we wrap this section, one of the issues we'll continue to look at is this institutional knowledge issue. So 150 of Minnesota's 201 legislators have less than 10 years experience. 109 have 6 years less experience. 82, nearly half, have 4 years less. And 27 have less than 2 years. If we're going to replace experience at the legislature, we have to do it with policymakers, not just activists. And that's something to watch and something to think about as we go forward. If you want to read this memo, go to fluence-advisory.com. Click on Insights. You can download some of our Insight memos. We write them at least quarterly about the state of affairs, the state of the economy, the state of the dynamics of Minnesota's policy and political environment. When we come back, this week's take: can we get anything done, or are we too busy holding press conferences that say nothing? I'm Blaise Olson. This is Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Back to Sunday Take. This week's take might be a little longer because I am feeling as though there's guidance needed. There's guidance needed to deal with some of the politics and information and misinformation that's out there. And as we're 2 weeks before the mayor's race, and as you heard from Murak, one voice, and you juxtapose that against Secretary Noem's press conference on Friday, the fact that we have these loud voices that are using mainstream media to get their points across is beginning to look a lot more like social media, where there's not much constructive discussion and there is actual misinformation, or in some ways, propaganda. And so this week's take is really about thinking about governing. If people are knocking on your door, I think you ask them how they're going to govern, what their policies mean to their communities, to their neighborhoods, to their cities, to their state. For instance, in the Minneapolis mayor's race, there's people who support an income tax in the city of Minneapolis. Now, we're going to watch and see Minneapolis and New York and see what kind of mayor they elect. But if there's an income tax in a city that already has higher property taxes, there's a really good shot that some of Minneapolis's most mobile residents would say, I'm going to leave. I don't want to pay a city income tax, especially the way the city has dealt with governing these last few years, from the city council to the mayor's office. And then we look ahead to the legislative campaign. And I think we have to ask again. I wonder how they will govern. Please note the comments on institutional knowledge, on budgeting. Rochelle Olson had a column this weekend about the need for Governor Walz to lay out a vision. Let's go. As you know, I've commented on that before for the governor's race. Anybody running for governor needs to talk about the future. And anybody who wants to be effective can't just dwell on the past. Yesterday morning, I came across a post about the White House from a former Minnesota Republican legislator that compared the East Wing demolition for President Trump's new ballroom with former President Obama putting up a basketball court. The image of the so-called basketball court with one Google was proven wrong. It was actually from the 1930s. But a former legislator was willing to post this out of irresponsibility and anger. And people did push back. But if a former legislator is willing to do that without doing their own homework, I'm concerned that existing legislators might not do their homework either. We have to do our homework. We have to be responsible in these discussions. And as normal everyday citizens, we have to tune in to keep people responsible. We can't tune out governing. Trust me, I know it's easy to do. If it wasn't my business, I think I might too. But to be responsible, we have to push back and we have to think about governing. Those are the three items that need to guide the discussions in the next 2 weeks in the mayor's races and in the next year in the legislative and the statewide races. We have to push back on slogans, free meals for all. I think that school lunch, school breakfast for kids is a pretty good idea. But when it costs more than you projected, then I can question whether or not you knew how you were going to implement it. Similarly, I can look at the Trump administration's ICE raids and the idea that they've made mistakes and they just shrug it off is to say you didn't think about actual operating and implementation. Because in a business, in life, in your household, those are the important things. How do you operate? How do you implement? I want to go through kind of the news of the week this week. Yesterday, the DFL hosted what they called was a town hall. I pushed back in Friday's newsletter and said, it's not a town hall if you don't have diverse voices of people who disagree. It was about gun control. The legislature's tied. The governor says he wants a special session. He says he can't get a special session because Republicans won't compromise. Republicans say we need to have a process. So we'll just skip that idea and go to a town hall, and then we'll invite all of our friends to a town hall, and the media will cover it, and Gabby Giffords will come, and we'll get media coverage. Which then essentially turns it into a rally, which then might be news, but are they making news? I think that's the other thing we need to start thinking about as we cover things. Are we making news? The reason I had Montana Hirsch on for MIRAC was because I see their news releases, but I'd never had a conversation. I wanted to hear from their own words where they came down on some of these immigration pieces. And you can make up your own mind about what she said and whether or not you're in agreement. But just because you're loud doesn't make you right. President Trump said in July that the existing structure of the White House would not be touched by the ballroom. And in fact, many people think that the idea that we were putting up tents for state dinners and events was probably not the best way to do it. So somewhere between we need a ballroom and we're not going to touch the existing White House, we spiraled into a national debate on whether or not he could put up a ballroom this week and destroy part of the East Wing. I frankly don't have strong feelings about whether or not we need a ballroom or not. I do have strong feelings about a president saying in July we weren't going to touch the existing structure, and then no update before we touched the existing structure. And so we can look at that and say he lied and we need a ballroom. It's just not the best way of going about doing it. I think everybody deserves to be suspicious right now. But the way to be less suspicious is to do your own research, to be responsible in what you share, to push back. And once you do your research on what it is we're trying to accomplish here. Because if we can't govern with transparency or trust, we're in a deeper deficit of democracy than I could have ever imagined. We have this issue with healthcare right now, and it's interesting to me that Democrats have said, for instance, that rural hospitals are closing because of Trump's big, beautiful bill and the Medicaid cuts. But the Medicaid cuts don't go into effect until 2027. So it's not current funding, it's future funding. Democrats are also holding government shut down because they want tax credits on the individual market. Something I happen to think is probably a good idea, but it was Democrats who put the deadline and the expiration date on the tax credit. But now they're blaming Republicans for not extending them. That's where pushing back, being responsible, and understanding the whole story is going to help. Senator Fetterman has highlighted this issue, but it hasn't gotten a ton of coverage because we're busy being loud and blaming people and calling folks who go to No Kings rallies the Hate America crowd. It's going to be a long year before next year's election. And our goal here on Sunday Take is to bring a little civility and a little responsibility and a little coffee talk to the environment. We're also going to expand the topics we talk about and talk much more about the quality of life and the candidates. We'll have some debates. But the strategy of the Omar Fateh's and others to demonize the media isn't going to help. The idea that federal Republicans very rarely do interviews with Minnesota media is also not enough. Governor Walz has an open invitation for an extended hour-long conversation on this program. I think it might happen in the next year because I'm an optimist. But as you look at the headlines and you think about the institutional knowledge we lost and the loudest voices from MIRAC to the MAGA crowd, do your own homework, push back, and be responsible with what you share. Because at the end of the day, these campaigns are really about who should govern and who should run the government, not about who scores points or gets adrenaline rushes off of tweets about state flags. I'm Blois Olson. That's the Sunday Take this week. I'll be with Vinita Monday through Thursday at 6:20. I'll be back next week with the next edition of the Sunday Take. I hope you have a great Sunday. Enjoy the last days of fall.
Girl, let's get real. Sun pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.